As I was walking over here just now, I was reflecting on, or maybe more like experiencing, time. I think in Sesshin, after we've been here a few days, the sense of time begins to change. And Dogen, of course, wrote a beautiful, complicated, almost impossible to understand essay about this experience. But he said, you know, you are time, in essence. You are time. And it's very hard to understand what that may mean. But in Sesshin, I think we get a glimpse of time is not something outside of us. Time is not something that we conduct our life to, as it is often during our daily life, right? We kind of got things to do, got to be done by 10 o'clock, and we treat time as something outside of us. But walking over time, I realized is me. And time is you. Another misconception I've noticed in myself over the years of practicing in Sesshin, aside from time, is that I believe I leave the world behind. I mean, that's kind of the purpose of it, right? I think I'm leaving the world behind. But, of course, the world is very much present in Sesshin. Perhaps more so even than in our daily lives. I think during Sesshin we become acutely aware of the busyness of our daily lives. Suddenly we have time to actually look at it. We have time to experience the depths of it. We have time to really notice the stories we tell ourselves all throughout our daily life about how important we are, how important we are not. There is the space here in Sesshin, especially after a few days, we notice the constant humming of the mind. And hopefully it begins to hum a little less. But I think we become deeply aware of it. And often those things that have had not the energy to come forward in our lives, come forward now as we sit here. One of the challenges we face in our digital kind of disembodied world is our fixation always on the outward. It's always on the outward. Things we need to do, the other people we need to contact, our screens that we look at, our experience of the world becomes very narrow. And even now, I think more narrow because particularly with our screens that we need so much in our daily life, we lose touch. We lose touch with our natural somatic awareness. Distracted by so much to do, by the pull of media, the life of the senses becomes short-circuited, and I believe we become largely numb to the beauty of the world. Yeah, we see the flowers once in a while and, you know, a nice interesting tree as we're rushing about in our daily life. But do we see the ladybug? Do we see the ant moving slowly across the floor? Part of Sesshin practice is to open wide all of our sense gates. Smell, taste, touch, sight, and allow those to fully enter us. In eating, we just eat. In washing our bowls, just washing. In walking to the dining hall, just walking. And through our open awareness to the body and all its sensations, then we begin to wake up. Be aware of the great web of life. We become a little more aware of the world as it is. And this is what Dogen is teaching us. Mountains and waters are insentient objects, things, or at least so we often view them. They are insentient and so separate. Separate from us, separate from that which is alive. Other people, pets, wild animals, mammals, fish, birds, cephalopods, and all the other creatures we deem, at least in some way, as sentient, meaning they have the ability to feel, to perceive, experience something subjectively. And the rest of the world is composed of unfeeling. Unfeeling life, perhaps, like trees, moss, bacteria, at least as far as we know. And perhaps most distant from us are the unfeeling, unperceiving objects like rocks, mountains, brick walls, computers. But in the Mountains and Waters Sutra, this text we're looking at, Dogen writes that this is a great mistake. The whole world around us is sacred. It is extraordinary and boundless. Look closely, Dogen admonishes us, and see that the categories and divisions that we make are only provisional. Just as one moment flows into the next, so does one form flow into the next, whether sentient or insentient. Indeed, Dogen, in this piece of writing and in many of his other pieces of writing, encourages us to soften our common views of sentient and insentient and open up to the teachings of both. I think this is particularly true and powerful in the kitchen. Is the knife just a tool? The pot? Just a pot? Dogen says no. Treat these things, these tools, as you would your own eyes, your own head. The teachings of the insentient have nothing to do with intellectual understanding or not understanding. The teachings of trees, rocks, mountains, and rivers, pots and knives enter through a Dharma gate that is beyond our discerning mind. Or maybe more accurately to say, it enters into a Dharma gate that is before the discerning mind. These enter through our eyes, our ears, nose, hands, skin. The teachings of the insentient touch us more directly. And these teachings of the mountains and waters that are part of the insentient are not carefully ordered or developed step by step. They are simply to be recognized. Recognizing insentient teachings is like suddenly finding yourself in a familiar place that you had forgotten. In Japanese, there's a lovely word called natsukashi. Natsukashi. And it is the feeling of going back to an old coffee shop you used to always go to as a student, and it's still there. I think this is why we come to mountains and we visit bodies of water. That feeling, natsukashi. The mountainous of our body, the solidity of our bones, teeth, and nails that Kate talked about the other night, recognizes mountains, rock, and stone. The blood and juices of our body recognize the ebb and flow of the oceans, the rivers, the lakes. The insentient inside of us recognizes the insentient outside. And in this way, our sense of home becomes vast. Water, whether we look at a lake or immerse ourselves in the ocean, has a calming effect, right? Blood is redistributed from the limbs to the brain, heart, and other central organs, apparently, when we do this. Cold water. The parasympathetic nervous system, apparently, that is our resting system. When we rest, it comes forward. That gets turned up. And the sympathetic nervous system, that kind of flight or fight response is part of that. That begins to relax when we immerse ourselves in water. And we don't really know why. Scientists, neurologists are studying this, and there are various explanations that are coming up. And one possibility is that the similarity in chemical composition of the brain, body, and water and seawater is the reason. Science recognizes what we perhaps all intuitively know, that the water coursing in our body and flowing on the Earth's surface are essentially the same. To say poetically, it calls out. They call out to each other. And only the skin separates us. The insentient inside recognizes the insentient outside. I think this is why I have seen a few of us taking a dip in the pond over there. You may think, oh, it's just the cooling, relax, cool off, go for a quick dip. You would not be quite right. The pond is calling to you. So let's go back, just look at a few more lines from this wonderful text of Dogen's. The Wen Su says, the Tao of water ascends to heaven, becomes rain and dew, descending to earth, becomes rivers and streams. The Tao of water. Well, I think as we all know, Tao is the ancient Chinese word for the way. The way in this, there's many actually ways we could translate that. Tao has many meanings. But in this case, I think it means the eminent, always present, always emerging, changing nature of things. This great flow that we are part of. And we may want to ask, well, what is the Tao of water? The essential nature of water, what is that? And when I was preparing for this talk, just by chance, and I don't quite understand how this happened, I came across a poem by D.H. Lawrence. This may be the only poem of D.H. Lawrence I've ever read. I just want you to know that. I've read some of his other writings, of course, in high school and stuff, but anyway. Here's the poem. Water is H2O. Hydrogen, two parts, oxygen, one. But there is also a third thing that makes it water. And nobody knows what that is. The atom locks up two energies, but it is a third thing present, which makes it an atom. What is this third thing that D.H. Lawrence refers to? What is the Tao of water? The Wenzi is a Taoist text said to be written by a student of Lao Tzu, who probably a legendary figure, but recognized as the person who wrote the Tao Te Ching and who kind of started the Taoist view of the world. So this person was named Wen, Master Wen, supposedly a student. So he's said to have lived about 500 BCE, a few years ago. And I wonder if this text was studied by Dogen when he was a young lad, learning to read the old Chinese philosophical texts as part of his education, which was very common in Japan if you were born into the aristocracy, and he was. So I find this very interesting. The Wenzi, this text, describes the water cycle. And I wonder, I became curious about when the water cycle was kind of first described in the West. And the earliest reference I found was in a work done by Aristotle called Meteorology. I'd never heard of it before. Written about 300 BCE. So Wenzi is 500 BCE. And that Aristotle wrote, "Now the sun, moving as it does, sets up processes of change and becoming and decay. And by its agency, the finest and sweetest water is carried up and dissolved into vapor and rises to the upper region where it is condensed again by cold and so returns to earth." And I was wondering how common the understanding of the water cycle was in Dogen's time, which is around 1200 in the Common Era. And the reason I wonder that, because Dogen has a little more criticism, particularly about monks. And he writes, this is, remember, he just made that reference to the Wenzi about the water cycle, and he says, "Such is said even in the secular world. It would be shameful indeed if those who call themselves descendants of the Buddhas and ancestors were more stupid than the secular." Well, in Dogen's time, much like the high Middle Ages in Europe, only the aristocrats, scholars, bureaucrats, and some religious knew how to read and write, at least to some extent. But I suspect there were many religious in Dogen's time who did not really know how to read and write very well. Perhaps were not well educated. And Dogen is taking a swipe here at the superstitious views that were prevalent among those in the Buddhist establishment at that time. And Dogen continues, although the way of water is unknown to water, water actually functions as water. Although the way of water is unknown to water, water actually functions as water. This is kind of a short sentence, but for us, a very important one. It really is one of the key foundations of Dogen's teaching and very important for our practice. Whether water knows itself or not, water fulfills its function as water. While this is kind of clear to us, water is pretty mysterious. It expands as it cools. Hot water seems to turn to ice faster than cold water, at least in some experiments. And it has the most extraordinary surface tension of any liquid, which allows it to cling to soil and allows insects to be supported on top of water. And the way water crystallizes in clouds is not really well understood either. It's amazing, there's still a lot that we're not sure about water. But here's Dogen's, I think, intention in that sentence. Like water, practice fulfills its function whether we know it or not. We are not able to judge our practice, although we try to do so much of the time, right? It was a good sit. It was a crappy sit. I'm no good at this. That practice fulfills its function whether we know it or not is really a critical point in Dogen's teaching. In the collection of koans known as the Gateless Gate, or the Momonkan in Japanese, there is a koan titled Everyday Mind is the Way, one that many of us are familiar with. In this koan, in this Zen story, the great teacher Nanchon tells his student, Jiaozhou, that holding on to knowing or not knowing are both just limiting. So here's the dialogue. Jiaozhou asked his teacher Nanchon, what is the way? What is the Tao? And Nanchon said, ordinary mind is the way. And Jiaozhou then asked, should I turn myself toward it or not? Nanchuan said, if you try to turn yourself toward it, you turn away from it. And Jiaozhou then asked, how can I know the way if I don't turn toward it? And Nanchuan replied, the way is not about knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is blank, or as another translation, stupidity. So hard for us to let go of evaluating our practice of knowing or not knowing. I think that's why most of us come into Dokusan. How am I doing? Where am I on the scale? How easy it is to fall into measuring one's practice and one's insight, assuming it's somewhat like measuring the growth of a child, right, on a door frame. You know, notching, okay, age 4 here, age 5, age 6. Dogen and Nanchon caution us not to fall into that ego trap. that to know or not know is not important. What is important, rather, is to act and to practice as best we can in the way. In the Genjo Koan, as we've referred to earlier in one or two of the talks, it's one of the seminal essays written by Dogen. I think some people here are quite familiar with it. Dogen writes this: when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they don't necessarily see they are Buddhas. However, they are enlightened Buddhas, and they continue actualizing Buddha. Well, it is true, taking stock of our practice in a general way can be helpful. But measuring it, evaluating it on some sort of scale, always leads to more self-centered stories about good or bad. Practice, like Dogen's water, fulfills its function, whether we know it or not. Let's go back to the quote. Dogen writes, "Ascending to heaven, it becomes rain and dew." Dogen says, "We should realize that water climbs to the very highest heavens in the highest quarters and becomes rain and dew. Rain and dew is of various kinds in accordance with the various worlds." Well, the traditional Buddhist cosmology identifies six realms of rebirth and existence: the god realm, the demigods, humans, animals, hungry ghosts, and hells. Water is everywhere, and in every form. And Dogen here is using water to represent our Buddha nature, our interbeing, our connectedness with all things, noting that the Buddha nature that we permeate everywhere. There are times in life when we enter the hell realm: despair, grief, bitterness, jealousy, depression. And there are times when life is really sweet: wonderful new relationships, good health, friendships, an interesting adventure. In all places, at all times, our essential nature is present. Or to use the terminology of Buddha nature, pervades everywhere. At times, this seems really obvious to us. And at times, we are blinded by our suffering and by our confused, deluded thoughts. But Dogen reminds us when he writes, "Water extends into flames. It extends into thought, reasoning, and discrimination. It extends into awareness and the Buddha nature." Flames and Buddha nature, both. There is water. Buddha nature is woven into all things, including our thoughts, reasoning, and discrimination. All of those aspects of our being that often we try to separate out or try get away from in our practice. But Dogen tells us that in our discriminating way of thinking, even there, a Buddha nature is present. Dogen continues, "Descending to earth," talking about the rain again, right? "Descending to earth, it becomes rivers and streams. We should realize that when water descends to earth, it becomes rivers and streams, and that the essence of rivers and streams becomes sages." So here again, in this short sentence, a really important teaching for us: the essence of rivers and streams becomes sages. We need to constantly remember what makes a Buddhist teacher or a sage or a good practitioner. It's not the individual. It's not you or me, but the water of the Dharma. This Dharma flowing. Maybe we could say that a sage is one who gets out of the way, allowing the Dharma to flow. And yeah, sages and teachers should be treated with respect, but not held beyond questioning or followed blindly. Dzogchen Norman Fisher, the teacher who ordained and transmitted both Kate and me, has always said, as your teacher, I only ask that you listen to what I have to say. Not that you follow it. Dogen continues, therefore, water is in places that are not rivers and seas. It is just that when water descends to earth, it works as rivers and seas. Well, water does appear in many places, and water has many functions. This is true of you and me. Like water, our function changes. Sometimes we function as a partner, a lover. Sometimes our function is as a daughter, a son, a mother, a parent, sibling, student. It changes from one moment to the next. In one moment, you perform or you function as a member of your profession, right? You're a lawyer. You're a tenzo. You're an Eno. You're a Tanto. The next moment, you're a driver, a teacher. But when you're at home, your own home back in wherever you live, you probably don't function in any of those ways, or very few. If I try to be a teacher at home with Kate, I get in trouble. I need to function as a partner. The water of your life, the Dharma of your life, flows in many streams. And those streams have names. We have given them names. But they are not you. They are just the condition of the moment. Now you function as the Tisoku. Now you function as the person who sits in front of the odoki bowls, opening them up, eating. An ocean, a lake, a river, dew, a cloud, just the condition of the water at the moment. And Dogen continues, moreover, we should not study that when water has become rivers and seas, there is then no world and no Buddha land within the water. Incalculable Buddha lands are realized even in a single drop of water. So be aware, Dogen teaches. Don't assume that the mundane and humdrum are separate and plain. Be aware of the mysteriousness of this world, its great complexity and interbeing. Returning from the distractedness of your busy day for a few moments, open up to the mystery. That's right here. As William Blake famously wrote, to see a world in a grain of sand, and heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. Outside of the Zendo here, in each leaf, each stone, each mosquito, Dogen would say, are incalculable Buddha lands. In you are incalculable Buddha lands. And Dogen continues, the way of water penetrates everywhere, above and below, vertical and horizontal. As Kate said on, I think it was Monday night, the human body is about 60% water. The great cedar outside our Zendo, the great cedars are about 50% water. Many of the plants that we see outside are 80 to 90% water. The average boulder is about 1% water. See, I've done my homework. And even moon rock has water. In this passage, Dogen is telling us there is nowhere where water does not reach. In other words, everything is interconnected. The use, Dogen's use of water as a symbol of Buddha nature, I think, is very appropriate. We are, you are, part of this infinite, ever-changing web of all things. Dogen continues. Nevertheless, when dragons and fish see water as a palace, just as when humans see palaces, they do not view it as flowing. And if some onlookers were to explain to them that their palace was flowing water, they would surely be just as amazed as we are now to hear it said that mountains flow. Still, there would be, undoubtedly, a few dragons and fish who would accept such an explanation of their palace. It's flowing. Oh. There are endless ways of perceiving water. For an Albertan farmer who just sowed her wheat seed for the season, rain is a blessing. But then trying to get the harvest in, rain is a disaster. For Pablo McCandless, Kate's second cousin, who is an extreme whitewater kayaker, the roar of an approaching rapids sounds ecstatic. For me, it would be terrifying. How we perceive water completely depends on who we are. Dogen acknowledges it is hard to see beyond our entrenched views and understandings. It is challenging to hear that mountains flow for most of us. Yet there may be a few dragons and fish amongst us who are able to accept, opening to other possibilities of how this world and how life may be. Anarzar Zen practice is one way we begin to see our fixed views as fixed views. We begin to question, and at times, fresh insights will arise. Sitting upright, returning to the present moment, we become intimate with the world as it is. David Abram, the ecologist and philosopher, writes in his famous book, Becoming Animal, breathing involves a continual oscillation between exhaling and inhaling, offering ourselves to the world at one moment and drawing the world into ourselves the next. What could be more intimate than our breath? I wonder how a fish or whale sees water. how a frog sees water, how a water strider sees water. I wonder how Kate sees water, how River or Kay or the rest of you. Do you see it the same as me? I imagine there are at least some small or slight differences. And this is probably true for all other senses too. We cannot assume that even our basic views are true for all. And this doesn't mean that we have nothing in common. I think it means just that we should cultivate a little humility and curiosity about this being right beside us. Dogen wrote in the Genjo Koan again, "Within the dusty world and beyond, there are innumerable aspects and characteristics. We only see or grasp as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. When we listen to the reality of the myriad things, we must know that there are inexhaustible characteristics in both oceans and mountains. And there are many other worlds in the four directions. This is true not only in the external world, but also right under our feet, or within a single drop of water." So let us take up the practice again of listening that was introduced yesterday. Going outside, we will listen to the world. But please listen not with your ears. Please listen with your whole body. And particularly, listen to the insentient. Listen to the rocks. Listen to the water that's still. As you listen to the sentient and the other sounds of this world, what is their dharma? What are they offering to you? Thank you.